Husker Doc Talk Podcast 2016 Spring Game Edition. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. I'm Travis Justice, back once again this spring. I guess it's the first time this spring with the one, the only, former Husker All-American, Big 8, Athlete of the Year, 1994, Dr. Rob Zavisky. What's up, Doc?
How are you doing this weekend?
You know, not too bad. We have not talked all spring long, and I got to thank everybody on social media who's been like, hey, when's the next Doc Talk podcast coming out? Because people have been wanting one. They've been waiting for one, and I put it out there on your Twitter account the other day that we'd be recording.
You just kind of like relit a fire under that Twitter
account. I did.
By doing so.
And I got to thank our favorite social media follower. Now, we have lots of social media followers, but the guy who runs the Southwest Missouri Husker Facebook page, the guy loves the podcast. He's a big supporter. He even gives me a hard time for being an Iowa guy, but at least he gets it, and he shares our podcast on his Facebook page and his Facebook group, and we appreciate him doing that, and we appreciate the support that everybody gives this podcast.
Exactly. Which, you know what? There's stuff to talk about. So
There really is. And, of course, we really need to thank Dave Remington and the Remington Trophy presentation for, once again, signing up for the 2016 season to be the official sponsor of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. And I talked to Dave just a couple of days ago, and he wanted me to remind everybody that coming up is the Remington Football Camp. Now, you may have a kid or know somebody who plays football, and the biggest thing now, especially when we talk about concussions and everything else like that, Rob, is being taught proper mechanics and being coached properly.
Technique.
And we know and I've been to the Remington Football Camp as an observer several times, that's what you're going to get. A lot of former Huskers participate
it is,
in this.
You know, you have a huge number of former Huskers, and especially it's a lot of former NFL guys. I mean, you got guys like Chris Bober regularly comes back to coach at the camp. He's a UNO guy. And so, but you've got a lot of NFL people who come back and are the instructors for this camp. And so your kids are getting essentially, not necessarily one-on-one, but darn near one-on-one instruction from a whole group of former college football players and NFL football players. It's one of the better taught, better instructed camps out there in terms of the quality of teachers, quality of instructors that Dave's able to bring in for this. And it's been a very good camp. And you know, for a city the size of Omaha, when you start looking at comparisons to, say, Kansas City, Dallas, Miami, wherever, to be able to have a camp like this with the quality of the instructors that Dave brings in is huge.
And here's the deal. They didn't have the camp last year. Dave has brought it back this year. And here's the information that you need to know. Go to RemingtonFootballCamp.com. I can tell you that the 2016 Remington Football Camp is going to run July 11th through the 13th at Millard South High School. If you want to talk to somebody about it, you can call 1-855-REMINGTON. That's 1-855-REMINGTON. The youth camp for ages 8 through 14 will run from 9 a.m. to noon, and the high school offensive line camp for grades 9 through 12 will run from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. So again, the Remington Football Camp gets signed up today, and of course all the proceeds go to the Boomer Esiason Foundation and the Remington Trophy presentation. So we are here for the wrap-up of spring practice, and Rob, I'm going to be honest with you. This is what I took away from spring practice this year for Nebraska. There was no drama. is that an accurate assessment?
You know, there was some, but it was nowhere near where everybody thought it was going to be. Everybody was expecting the quarterback position to be this kind of this, who's going to be the starter? Is Patrick O'Brien going to come in and take over the starting job from Tommy Armstrong? And you know what? Taylor Martinez came in as a redshirt freshman and took over for a returning senior starter. Are we going to see the same thing again? And no, it just really didn't pan out that way.
And what I mean by drama is, you know, last year we had Bo Pelini, of course, getting fired right after the season. Mike Riley comes in.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it just seemed to be a normal spring routine where some jobs were up for grabs, some improvement needed to be made, but they could focus on playing as a team, and there was no outside distractions.
Well, that's true. You didn't have that learning from scratch issue that you had to deal with. And I think last year, guys are learning a brand new system, and a little bit in winter conditioning, I'm sure they throw hey, here's the playbook, and now we can't talk to you until spring practice starts. But, I mean, guys, essentially last spring was the first time they saw what they were going to be doing in the fall in terms of the defensive system, in terms of the offensive plays. This year, most of that was already in place, and I'm sure there's probably some refinements. I know when I was down in college in Lincoln, the coaching staff would always tweak the playbook a little bit and change things up a bit. But for the most part, 80, 90% of what you did the year before, that was kind of the same stuff that you were working on in the spring. And this is the, compared to last year, this is the first time these guys have been able to go into a spring having a reasonable grasp of what they did last year carrying over to what they're doing this fall. And so I think that makes a big difference, because now you can concentrate on some of those areas that I think Nebraska maybe not necessarily was all that strong at last year. And that was technique. That was the fundamental skills. That was not jumping off sides. That was not holding, although we had more than enough penalties in the spring game, mostly holding penalties. I believe there was only one false start by the offensive line. But spring football is one of those times where you want to work on fundamentals. You want to work on basic techniques. You want to review all of that stuff and really drill that stuff in. So when you're going into fall camp, you've kind of already had that refresher course, and you can kind of just jump in and go. And last spring, spring of 2015, you didn't have that because it was all learning. It was learning a new system. And it's harder than you think to make that kind of change up, especially when you've been used to the previous system. It's hard to do. It's a big step, and I think it's hard to understate. Let me correct that. It's hard to overstate how big a deal it is that these guys didn't have to completely learn from scratch a new system this spring.
Of course, this is the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. I'm Travis Justice, joined by former Husker Dr. Rob Zadiska. And when you look at the game yesterday, there's a lot of different ways to play a spring game, and sometimes
it is still just a practice.
And I've said this going back to my days on Fox 42, then it carried over to Channel 3. I understand why 72,000 people go to a game, because it's more like a staycation. It's a day of just getting back. You know, it's a nice day. You get to go out and spend time with the family.
And it's a chance for a lot of people who maybe they do a spring season tickets. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. This is a chance for a lot of people to be able to watch Nebraska football players in a game-type setting, live and in person. And, you know, I know they pack 90,000 people in there for every home game in the fall, but such a huge number of those people are UNL students and season ticket holders. And if you don't fall into that one of those two categories, it's not always easy to be able to go down. And in terms of a family-friendly environment and a cost-effective environment, being able to go down and watch Nebraska football players play, and this is the opportunity for a lot of people to do that.
Now, I think Nebraska is genius when it comes to marketing the spring game, and I think they were really the trendsetters when it came to maybe making money. And they were the first team to do this.
Now, I'll be the first to admit.
And it was right after the 94 national championship.
And it was. But I'll be the first to admit, you look at now, Ohio State had, what was it, like 101,000. Alabama had like 79 or 80,000 people at their spring game. Nebraska is no longer the largest spring game in attendance anymore, but they were the first ones to do it. And when you looked at what they did, which I even think about, you mentioned after Nebraska won that national title after my senior year, you had a big crowd of people there. But I mean, we're still talking in that era, that was still
what, 30 or 40?
Not even.
No, 20 maybe.
I could tell you, I believe we had 28,000. And some numbers stick in my head. It was kind of mid-high 20,000 people for the spring game following my senior year. And a lot of those people showed up because the night before they had a big national championship celebration in Memorial Stadium that was open to the public. So a lot of those people came back for the spring game the next day. The following year, which was after the 95 national title season, so now you're celebrating back-to-back national titles, it was also days after Brooke Berenger, wonderful person, passed away in the plane crash. They went ahead, played the spring game, but they did a big tribute to Brooke again, both the night before the spring game and during the spring game. That spring game attracted a little over 40,000 people. And I remember at the time that was somewhat mind-blowing that you had that many people at a spring football game, because it shattered the previous national record, which was Nebraska the year before with 27, 28, 29,000 people.
Now, I've been highly critical of spring games over the years. And because there's always a spring game star who never really turns into a regular season star. But I will say this. I'm going to give Mike Riley a huge compliment. I've seen a number of different formats. I like what they did with the offense against the defense. I like the way the defense was rewarded for a certain amount of points. I like the way the offense was rewarded for big plays and so on. I like the format they had for this.
You know, it made for an interesting spring game because the defense was in a position as to where they could actually do something that the fans could enjoy. Points were scored. And, I mean, the defense, what was it? They basically won the game on the final play with that interception. It did make it interesting. You know, I'm one of those guys where when we played it, it was still a scrimmage, but you broke it up. You had a red team. You had a white team. The red team was the first string offense and the second string defense. The white team was the first string defense and the second string offense. It did make it interesting in the sense that it was still a reasonably well-matched scrimmage, I guess. You had the first string offense against the first string defense for a quarter. You put the first stringers against the second stringers for a quarter. And then the third and fourth quarter were a lot of the backups, guys who didn't maybe not would get a chance to get on the field that next fall. But it was a chance for a lot of those guys to be able to go out and play in a game-type atmosphere. But it felt essentially like a game because you were playing ones against ones, second string against second string. You're playing against well-matched people for most of the snaps of that spring game, the way Osborne ran it. It did make it interesting, though, and I appreciate the fact that anymore, to a degree, you've got to cater to the fans a little bit. You got to cater to the recruits. It's a big recruiting weekend for a lot of these guys, and I think that if recruits can show up and they see 70,000 people in the stands for a spring football game, and at the same time, those recruits are seeing the fans getting into it. They're seeing something interesting. They're seeing something that's entertaining. It's good for recruiting. And I think anymore, the spring game's got to be a tool for recruiting as well.
Of course, if you like what you hear, we're always looking for sponsors for the upcoming 2016 season. Of course, the Remington Trophy presentation on board again as the presenting sponsor of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. If you know of a Husker business or somebody in the Nebraska area that would like to support the Husker Doc Talk podcast, we would like to hear from them. Of course, sponsorships now available for the 2016 season. And if you're looking to get away with your wife, I have a couple's trip that is absolutely amazing. It is a trip to Tuscany for a week. My wife and I are hosting a trip to Tuscany. It will take place the last weekend in October, first weekend in November. If you are interested in getting away to see the lovely area of Tuscany, I've been there five or six times, and I'd encourage you to join my wife and I on a trip of a lifetime. It's basically all-inclusive. Everything's taken care of except your airfare. For more, just go to TotalTuscany.com. Again, TotalTuscany.com if you're interested in a couple's trip. We have four couple spots remaining. We'd love to have you along to enjoy a European vacation with me and my wife. So you got to see the game yesterday. You know, Mike Riley talked about things they wanted to improve on this spring. Giving up big plays was one of them, holding onto the football another. Will we really see the fruits of that until the regular season?
You're not going to see much. You know, as much as you'd like to see it, then we talked about the fundamentals of the spring game. You got to keep in mind, these guys haven't been through a fall camp. They haven't been through a 2 days kind of setup. At the same time, also, it's 15 practices. I mean, everybody makes a big deal about spring football, but you're taking 15 workouts. You're spreading them out over about a month's period of time. These guys have essentially been practicing 2 to 3 days a week, and that's it, over 4 or 5 weeks. It's not like this has been a real intensive number of practices that these guys have had to go through. And so from a fundamental standpoint, you really want to work on those fundamentals. From the standpoint of being able to eliminate all mistakes, it's hard to do. And you saw that yesterday. I think, like I had mentioned earlier, there was two or three holding calls. You had one offsides. You don't want those mental mistakes, but it's hard to completely eliminate them just with the sheer number of practices that you had in that setting.
If you would like to get a hold of us at any time, you can always email us at DocTalkSports@gmail.com, DocTalkSports@gmail.com, and of course follow us on Twitter at DocTalkSports. So one of the things I'm going to be working on for the 2016 season, I'm going to try to develop a Facebook page for DocTalkSports, and just maybe if I find enough time, I'm going to throw a website together too. So Rob, you and I can have a website.
Holy criminy.
So again, that's to help our sponsors out, because we like sponsors. You know, we do this for fun. I mean, let's be honest, you and I do this for fun, but there are
there are
costs that go involved with producing one of these podcasts from the equipment that we have. If you've listened to a lot of podcasts, and ours is studio quality. I mean, there's no doubt about it. We are in a studio. There's costs involved with that. There's, you know, costs with hosting, all sorts of stuff. So the sponsorship's not a big deal, but it just kind of offsets the cost that, you know, we take on during the season. So I'm not begging. I'm just stating the fact of what a sponsorship helps bring to the Husker Doc Talk podcast. Anybody impress you over the spring?
You know, there was three things that really stood out to me, and it's something that I think that all fans have kind of been essentially kind of wanting to see going into the spring. One of those is the quarterback position. What were you going to see? Because you had what was Tommy Armstrong going to look like? And last year was, it was very much a transitional year for the guy coming in with a new system. You had a guy who had a degree of success under Bo Pelini, and now you've got a whole new coaching staff, a whole new system that he was having to learn literally at the 50% mark of his college career. And he's a guy who really got panned last season. And I think two things that really stood out was, one, decision-making and throwing ability. And you hear people, they kind of keep harping on Nebraska's, what's their identity going to be on offense? Under Osborne, there was always an offensive identity. And I think people have wanted to know, what's it going to be under Riley? And I think within the scope of the system that Riley runs, I think there's the potential for a really good pro-style offense, a good, very solid running game, and an efficient passing game. It's just that a guy like Tommy Armstrong doesn't necessarily fit that pro-style system. And so I think Nebraska just hasn't had an ability to develop that identity to its fullest, because you've got a starting quarterback who arguably, at least up to this season, hasn't been a great fit for that type of offensive system. I think a lot of people were really excited to see what a guy like Patrick O'Brien was going to be able to do. You had him coming into school early and rolling at the semester mark. Is this a guy who is going to be able to step in, and by the time he gets through fall camp, is this somebody who's going to unseat Tommy Armstrong and be the starting quarterback next year? Because he does fit that identity that I think Riley and Danny Langsdorf want to implement at Nebraska. And I think going over the course of spring football, I think the answer to that is, at least at this stage, a pretty resounding no. And
you can't substitute experience.
No, you can't. And I think, you know, as much as people hamper on or say Armstrong's hampered by his lack of throwing ability, one, you know, the guy actually has a very strong arm. If he wants to put the ball 50, 60 yards downfield, he's got the capability to put a football 50, 60 yards downfield. Is his technique great? No, it's not. Does he throw off his back foot when he shouldn't? Yeah, he does. He doesn't have the best throwing technique. Does he occasionally pull the trigger too early, try to make a big play when the big play's not there and we end up with an interception? Yes, he does. But I think those are things that hopefully he continues to work on and continues to clean up. I thought we saw that during the bowl game this year against UCLA. Armstrong went season long. It seemed like just slinging interceptions left and right. Anytime he had a good pass rush on him, the running game wasn't giving you the results you wanted. Here's Armstrong resorting to the pass, falling into bad habits technique-wise, and throwing another interception. And I think I really thought in the bowl game he really did a good job of playing within the system They ran the ball effectively. They passed it efficiently. And they ended up, offensively at least, kind of trouncing a pretty darn good UCLA team. Now, it was a UCLA team that was a little undermanned because of injuries. They didn't have a lot of depth. But it was still a very talented UCLA team. And I think that if Nebraska plays within that system, if Tommy Armstrong plays within the system, makes good decisions, I think he's going to be just fine. I don't see Tommy Armstrong not being the quarterback this year. I think he's really got that position locked up. And I just think it's going to be too hard for a guy like Patrick O'Brien, who definitely has all the tools you want. I don't know if O'Brien necessarily needs to redshirt, but I think O'Brien would be a guy who I would love to see him maybe be a good, solid second-string guy and get half a quarter or a quarter's worth of game snaps every game, every other game this fall, because then going into his sophomore year, I think he would be darn near unstoppable and be a wonderful fit for the system. You've got Tanner Lee as well. You've got a proven pro-style college quarterback with starting experience coming in from Tulane. There's another guy that'll be interesting to see how he pans out by the end of fall camp. I think Riker Feist's going to be relegated to pseudo second string, third string, and I think A.J. Bush is a guy who's got incredible, incredible, incredible athletic ability. Very strong arm, an uncanny ability to run with a football, who is just such a horrible fit for this offense. And I'm not sure he really, truly, fully grasps conceptually this offense. And I think that's really held him back and is going to keep him off the field pretty much for most of his senior season. But that's how, right now, I think it's going to be Armstrong, I think, hands down, has the starting position locked up. If he can eliminate that tendency he has where it seems he goes out, takes the ball on the snap, and the very first read, if it looks like the opportunity is there to make a big play, even if it's an ungodly slim opportunity with a high percentage for an interception, he's taken it. And that's been his tendency his first 3 years, and especially last year. And I think if Armstrong can eliminate that, play within the confines of the system, make good decisions, hold on to the ball, take off running when he should take off running, throw it away when he should throw it away, and not try to force those big plays, which I think he has been wont to do in the past, I think he's going to end up with that starting quarterback position locked down, and nobody's going to be able to unseat it from him. I think you're going to see, at least by the end of the season, Patrick O'Brien coming in as a good, solid number two. I think Riker Feist, God bless the in-state kid, but I just don't see him from the standpoint of having all of the tools that somebody like Patrick O'Brien has. I don't see him maintaining that second-string spot throughout the course of the season. Tanner Lee is going to be kind of the dark horse. I think he's got to sit out this fall anyway, so it's kind of a moot point. He has to redshirt. A.J. Bush, again, it wouldn't surprise me if sometime during the course of the summer he kind of quietly transfers.
So that's the quarterbacks. You mentioned three areas of spring. What else?
I think offensive line was the other position that I think there was a lot of big question marks about. You really had one very solid returning starter in Nick Gates who moved from right tackle over to left tackle. I think the question there was going to be, how's a guy like David Neville, who monstrous body, huge guy, incredible athletic ability. Basically, he's a really, really big NBA caliber small forward trying to play basketball on a football field. And he's a guy who didn't have a great deal of competition coming out of high school in Canada, but has by far and away probably the best physical tools of anybody on the offensive line. And they kind of had him slotted in at right tackle. I think they were hoping he'd pan out well at right tackle. And he's had a very solid spring, I think, in terms of physical ability, in terms of footwork, not the easiest thing for a 6'9 guy to have. I think he's going to be really good. He was one of those guys that I think was just a little bit of a question mark going into spring practice. And I don't want to say it's been a pleasant surprise, but it's been a pleasant process watching him lock down that right tackle spot. It'll be interesting to see what happens at center. As of this stage, it sounds like Paul Thurston is going to transfer, has asked for a scholarship release to transfer and potentially try and play his last year of football. He was given a sixth year of eligibility by the NC2A, and so he's going to probably try and play that out elsewhere. Again, Dylan Utter was solid last year during the season, then into the kind of mid-season onward last year and in through spring ball, nursing a little bit of a knee injury that kept him essentially out of the spring game. And so they had Michael Decker, a very highly touted recruit out of Omaha North, who is another guy that I think it'll be interesting to see, because he has by far and away more physical tools than Dylan does to work with. Size, strength, footwork. I think he's an incredible talent. It would not surprise me if, as a redshirt freshman, he ends up at some point in fall camp potentially overtaking Utter and locking down that center position. You know, the guards are going to be a little bit of a question mark in terms of how guys like Foster are going to lock down positions there as well. I was pleasantly surprised, though, to see Decker at center come out, start the spring game because of the injury to Dylan, and be able to play that essentially most all the spring game and perform very, very well. And then, like I said, Neville at right tackle. Though that was, like I said, the offensive line was an area that I was a little bit worried about. Last year they had five guys that they went into the season with. They essentially played five guys. People made a big deal out of the fact that last fall they didn't substitute, they didn't swing guys. But you know what? You only had five guys to work with. There's not a huge number. Pelini was not, and his staff were not, the strongest offensive line recruiters. Going into this season,
make the argument they weren't the strongest recruiters, period?
That argument could be made. I'm not going to deny that. But I mean, offensive line was a gaping hole. I mean, it was a gaping hole recruiting-wise in terms of having bodies to work with. You've at least this year compared to last year, you've got 8-9 guys that you can work with going into the season, and that's almost double what they had last year. Last year was a disaster going in terms of numbers on the offensive line. Now, you mentioned the other areas of concern or areas of drama. The other one's the defensive line, and that's a spot where last year it wasn't bad. And a lot of the reason it wasn't bad is because you had Malik Collins and Vincent Valentine holding down those two interior spots, and it was two NFL caliber guys. And if you've got that, if you've got a couple of, I call them anchor players, if you've got a couple of anchor guys on the defensive line, guys who can chew up space, take up a couple of double teams, it frees the linebackers and defensive ends up, and it makes life easier for everybody. Nebraska's pass rush last year, everybody harps on the pass defense and the pass rush last year. I get it. It was horrible. But on the flip side, think about the fact that Banker and his staff did a really, really good job shutting down the opponent's running game. Almost nobody ran effectively against Nebraska last year, and a lot of that had to do with having Collins and Valentine at those interior positions.
Just a couple big runs by Iowa in that last game.
Two. They had two.
The game, though.
Yeah,
it meant the game.
And it did. Well, yeah,
had to get that in.
When Kirk Ferentz paid the refs to toss Nebraska's starting safety. Good Lord.
Hey, Greg McMullen leaves the team to focus on his graduate degree.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around this.
You want to say, good for you. You're getting your graduate degree mentoring youth. And then there's a part of you like, what the hell are you doing?
I don't get it. I know plenty of guys who mentor youth while they're playing football for Nebraska. Now, and it's one of these things. There's a story here that I don't know, and I will probably never know. The guy's made his decision. You know what? It's not for me to judge. It's not for me to know. I'm just saying.
This is a podcast. You can judge.
I don't get it. I got no idea. What the hell, dude?
You know, I hate to say this.
You got a guy who this was going to be his third year as a starter. Unless he's a guy who's just like, God, you know, I never really liked football, but shoot, you know what? It was paying for college, and so I'll play as long as it's paying for college. Oh, I graduated. Screw this shit. I'm going to go do something else
now.
Well,
I mean, do you give up your scholarship? I mean, because you could go to graduate school for free if you're still on scholarship, right?
Yes.
Why would you give that up?
I got no clue. I don't know.
I mean, that's leadership. I mean, that's experience. That's leadership.
He was solid. You know, as much as people harped on Nebraska's pass rush ability from the defensive end spot, he was playing out of position as a defensive end and was still solid.
He was
at worst solid.
See, this is what's refreshing is that, you know, you hear somebody, well, he's getting his degree. He's gonna go out and help kids. I'm glad you have the balls enough to say, I don't get it.
Because Riley, to his credit, was ungodly diplomatic about it. He really was. And you know what? There's coaches who would have said, hey, we're really disappointed, and this is going to hurt the team, and we're still trying to figure this out. But he didn't. He was great about it. And I got to be, I'm just sitting here scratching my head. I don't get it. Now, if it was one of these things where, you know, he probably wasn't going to be the starter, somebody else was going to beat him out.
That's not the case.
No, they were counting on this guy. When I talked about having a couple of guys, a couple anchor spots on the defensive line, Greg McMullen was the anchor going into next fall. He was it. I mean, they just cut the chain and the ship is drifting now. I don't get it. Now, they've got guys. I mean, they've got some guys. I mean, I think...
Are they Pelini loyalists? This is like, what, the fourth guy to leave since the end of the 2015 season?
I don't know. It's kind of interesting because I think on the defensive line spot, I think he had guys like Collins, who I think Malik Collins was truly in a position of, hey, you know what? I'm going in the first two, three, maybe fourth round spots, and any more, he's staring down at least probably close to $500,000 a year base salary. I mean, I say base salary, including signing bonus plus his base salary. He's going to be averaging ballpark $500,000 over his first contract. That's hard to turn down. I don't begrudge that. I think Vincent Valentine was in a position of where, you know, he's going to get picked up. But he was not projected first through third rounds like Malik Collins was. I think he was projected as like a fourth through sixth round, maybe a free agent even. I just don't think those two guys ever developed a relationship with Hank Hughes. And I think that's one of the things that led to Hank Hughes getting let go. I think the other big thing was lack of recruiting ability and lack of just recruiting want. I just don't think the guy wanted to get out, pound the pavement, and go see recruits. And I think that killed Hank Hughes. Now, with Williams and McMullen transferring, leaving school, or quitting football, I almost kind of wonder if you brought in the exact opposite. You brought in John Perrell. You brought in a big energy guy, a guy who has, I mean, on the field, he definitely was he was a motor guy as a defensive tackle.
You hugely played with John, right?
I did. We had but including my redshirt year, 3 years overlap.
Okay, because you and I have not had a podcast since he was hired. Good hire for Nebraska?
I golden hire. I think he was a great hire. Now, I would be the first to admit, I think the first guy they contacted, I'm blanking on his name, but he was UCLA's defensive line coach who has churned out NFL guys left and right and is a highly, highly regarded assistant coach. I think Perrella was the second person they called in, and that's why Hank Hughes left. Man, a week and a half later, Perrella's being named as the new defensive line coach. It happened fast because they had a very short list and they did not have to go deep on that list. But I think he's a golden hire. But you got a guy, 12-year NFL veteran, who started for, I think, 11 of those 12 years and has a nonstop motor. Mentally and emotionally, intelligence-wise, Perrella doesn't quit. I think he went from a laid-back guy where I almost kind of wonder if maybe the inmates were kind of running the asylum a little bit under Hank Hughes. to where you've got a very strong leader, a guy with a massive work ethic and expects his players to have that same work ethic. And I think all of a sudden, I think you had a couple guys leave because they never fought, they were never able to develop a relationship with Hank Hughes. I think you had the exact opposite happen with a guy like Perella coming in who has so much energy and is go, go, go all the time. I think there's probably a couple of these guys who are like, you know, I had it under easy street the last year or so. This guy's going to make me work my ass off. Screw this shit. I'm leaving.
You know,
I wonder if that played into it.
And it could have. I want to get to this before we sign off for the spring game edition. Nebraska fans have been stargazing more than I've seen since the Bill Callahan era. And what I mean by stargazing is that we are following recruiting a lot closer now that it almost reminds me of the Bill Callahan era. But the difference is Bill Callahan could recruit, but he didn't know how to coach college football.
Bo Pelini's best years were with Bill Callahan recruits.
Absolutely. And I still Hands say down. This. Bill Callahan had guys that could recruit. They just didn't know how to coach the college game.
Agree.
But now you have guys that are getting aggressive in California, getting big-time names, but these guys can coach college players.
It's interesting the names they're getting. They're like Tristan, I'm going to, Jebby or Tristan Gebbia. I'm looking at him going, why the hell did he come here when you're looking at some of the quarterbacks they've already got in front of them?
What do you think of the Keyshawn Johnson get? And also, do you like these recruits who are making their announcements on video? I'm telling you, I don't like what Bleacher Reports do. I know fans love it, but I think it crosses the line. I really do. I think it crosses some ethical line.
I don't know if it's crossing an ethical line, but it's a little bit of a mud on the face thing. If you know, what I worry about is a lot of these guys coming in, and if you don't pan out, when I say pan out, become, say, at least a two-year starter, I think it's egg on the face.
So do I.
I mean, it's you've got to have great recruits. You've got to have it. The problem is you figure probably one out of three of these guys are not going to pan out and become full-time starters. They're just not. I mean, that's the numbers of it. There's only so many spots on there's only 22 starting positions minus the kickers. And for these guys to go through this effort, you know, you better pan out. You better be that good if you're going to be making those kind of videos. I'll say this. I like it better than the whole hat game thing because that's almost one of these. You're almost disrespecting the other schools. With these, it's a little lighthearted. It's a little bit more fun. But I think you're putting these kids' expectations so high
But if you're a head coach who's devoted hours upon hours and money upon money recruiting a kid, and you got to wait for a freaking Bleacher Report video to come out to find out who he's going with, that would piss me off.
I'm just saying. I get it. I totally get it. But, I mean, they're going to find out one way or another either way. I would like to think that the kids would at least be calling the head coach and say, hey, don't say anything. I'm coming to you. My video's coming out tomorrow, but I just wanted to call and tell you in person. I would like to think they're doing that. Honestly, they're probably not.
But if somebody's listening, Jesus, Travis, you sound like a crusty old man. I am. I don't like recruiting. I'm not a big guy who goes into recruiting, but I also come from a different generation. I come from a generation that wants their kids to play for people like Connie Orie or Bob Knight. I don't mind if my kids get yelled at. I just come from a different. I come from a different era.
But Travis, where's their safe place going to be? their safe space.
Anybody safe space? Safe space. That's what you're going to get now. College athletes are going to need a safe space.
Oh, they already are. I mean, for Pete's sakes, you look at Texas Tech and Craig James' kid, for God's sakes.
Oh, that's right.
He didn't have a safe space there in Lubbock, apparently.
No, he didn't. Well, I hope you enjoyed the spring edition of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. Don't forget, our main sponsor is the Remington Trophy. And don't forget about Dave Remington and the Remington football camp coming up July 11th through the 13th at Millard South High School. Get your son signed up today. Youth camp, ages 8 to 14, runs from 9 a.m. to noon. The high school offensive line camp, grades 9 through 12, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. at that Millard South. Go to RemingtonFootballCamp.com. Doc, should we try to do one like once a month till August, and we'll hit it full stride then?
I think we should.
All right. So look for more Husker Doc Talk podcasts coming up in May, June, and July, and then we'll go weekly starting in August. If you know somebody who'd like to sponsor the Husker Doc Talk podcast, just give us an email, doctalksports@gmail.com. For Dr. Rob Zadisk, I'm Travis Justice. We'll talk to you next time on the Husker Doc Talk podcast.